I want to make sure no one dies alone. And I want to make sure that no one dies uncomfortable to the best of my ability. I want to make sure that people die feeling safe. And I also want to make sure that families and friends of people who have lost someone that they care about can understand and navigate grief with tools that I can provide them.
Welcome to the Open Exploration Podcast. I'm on a mission to connect with rule breakers, dream makers, and all around inspiring people to explore the possibilities for living a vibrant and honest life on my own terms. Hey, everyone. Today's conversation is a really cool one because we got to record in a beautiful space outside on a sunny morning this fall. You'll hear birds chirping and the occasional insect flying by. Also, a heads up, especially if you're driving and get spooked like I do, you'll hear sirens in the background about halfway through the episode. On the day of the recording, I pulled up to what looks like a regular house in a regular neighborhood, but hidden behind the house is a farm bursting at the seams with flowers and vegetables and trees. Half Moon Farm is the dream come true of our guest today, Eric Rooney. In our conversation, you'll hear how Eric transitioned from his days of briefcase carrying and corporate living in San Francisco to, well, what he does today, which is a little tough to pin down, actually. He's a farmer and a florist and a landscaper, but he also works in death and dying, in service to the elderly and terminally ill, in grief support, in advocacy and education regarding greener options after death. To give you an example, when I first connected with Eric over the phone, he was on his way back from dropping off nearly 100 bouquets at a local hospice care center. And the morning we recorded, he was preparing to host a group of elementary boys just days after they had tragically lost a dear classmate. As you'll hear, Eric is also getting ready to launch a nonprofit focused on end-of-life care, death education and programming, advocacy and support for medical aid in dying, and grief support. That organization is called Regeneration Earth, and the website, regenerationearth.org, will be live by the end of this month. You can also find out more about Eric's farm at halfmoonfarm.co. Without further ado, my conversation with Eric Rooney. Well, Eric, thank you so much for having me at the farm today. This is such a gift already to be here and to get to see where you live and work every day. Could you maybe describe some of your favorite parts of the farm and where we're sitting right now?
We might be here for a minute. I love all parts of the farm, and I love my citrus plants. And people may think, citrus in Colorado?
That is exactly what I was thinking.
I have a greenhouse that is heated, and I move my plants everywhere around to follow the sun and to be in their most habitable spaces. And so where we're sitting right now is underneath this beautiful elm tree. And underneath her are my fruit trees and guava, papaya, persimmon, grapefruit. All of my more tropical plants underneath this tree have a little bit of shelter under here. We have pretty intense sun. So this is one of my most special spaces. And also because this is where the community tends to gather. This is where we host celebrations of life. This is where we host educational opportunities for every age group. This is where sometimes I sit and reflect and write and read. Sometimes I take my meetings out here. This is probably one of my favorite spaces, but I do love it all.
Yeah, it's beautiful here. I asked you before how your morning had been, and you said something along the lines of, like, I wake up with this glee that I get to do what I want to do every day. I think when you said that, it sounded to me like a person who didn't always get to wake up with that glee of doing what you wanted to do every day and sort of having that contrast. Can we talk a little bit about what you did before you were a farmer?
Definitely. I've always been a farmer in some sense, and that manifested in having to mow the lawn. I was born in South Florida in 1989, and I grew up in the Carolinas, where I got a lot of my education and experience until I moved to Colorado 10 years ago this year. And before I chose this life, I was a middle school science teacher. I taught kids. And I still do today, but it was different in the sense that I had to adhere to somebody else's story of what they thought was best in teaching. And for me, being as of a creative mind and an intuitive mind, there was a lot of restrictions. I didn't feel free. I didn't feel that I was providing the future with an opportunity to think freely like me. And then I fell in love and wanted to experience a bigger city, and I got a job in tech in San Francisco and moved to San Francisco in 2015. And it was in sales, facing tech. It was part-time sales, part-time executive assistant to our founder and CEO. And boy, was I sad. I wasn't sad in my bank account, but I was sad in authenticity. And I was sad in authentic joy, authentic play, because kind of bringing me back to my years as a teacher, there wasn't much room to be creative. And it was a telling of what to do in my experience, rather than being able to create new ideas or implement new policies or use my experiences to make systems better. It was, this is how it's going to be done. Did you send the email? This is now Q2. These are our goals. Did we reach these goals? And it didn't flow and it didn't feel right for me. And that's when I founded my first business, was in the fall of 2015 from San Francisco, California.
Wow. Well, I want to hear more about the business, but I think first, trying to picture your life at that time. I also was a middle school teacher for a few years and loved so much about it. And I think what you're saying just hits home so much. I think there's this other element too of spending my day under fluorescent lighting and kind of the constant like buzz of the air conditioner. And so I think about those really like visceral felt elements of my life at that time. And for years and years and years, just kind of in that space. And so I'd love to backtrack a little bit and think about, what did it feel like day to day? Like, where were you spending your time? How are you spending your energy? What did that season feel like?
You brought me back to some memories that are helping me now tap into probably more reasons why I didn't like it. I got a job working at a school in Denver Public Schools at a medical facility for students who are chronically ill. And I was teaching in the basement, and I did not have a window for students who are chronically ill. So I would begin to kind of discover and ask questions. Can I do this? We should do this. And what I saw was a lot of red tape. And what I saw was a lot of restriction. And what I experienced and what I felt was something that I wasn't able to control in maybe this lifetime, or something that I wasn't going to be. I needed a window now. I need a window right now. Tomorrow.
Right.
We're putting a hole in this wall and we're building a window. I'll pay for it.
I don't want to sit in the basement with all these kids without sunlight for one more hour.
And I knew what it was doing to me. Even the smells of a basement, they're not healthy smells. And here I was at a medical facility teaching students who are chronically ill. I was watching the nurses giving them care every day. And that's why these students are there, because they didn't have the resources at home to have this care. So I knew something had to change. And so I began a new adventure, controlling what I could. And that was first myself and the opportunities I could provide people. It's pretty wild, actually, to reflect on. Sometimes, you know, I need assistance in remembering how I got to where I was, because some of these stories I forget, but they're still part of, direct part of why I'm doing what I'm doing, is because I felt this.
And probably a direct part of that glee when you get to start the morning and walk outside and spend your whole day in the sunshine.
That's sovereignty. That's freedom. Being able to go on a hike on a Thursday afternoon and not have to worry about meetings or what is my boss going to say, or being able to smell the fall and feel the rain. Or even days when I know I just need to rest. That's a beautiful thing. And you don't get that in corporate America. And you don't get that in traditional workplaces. And so I want to be happy. And I'm working still on all of that. And I think I will be for my entire life. But I feel pretty damn good. I feel pretty darn good being able to live this life and sometimes maybe be a mirror for other folks who are either seeking this out or maybe have it and maybe don't wake up with that glee.
I want to hear a little bit more about that period of your life in San Francisco. There's so many different paths, and that might have been a beautiful fit for somebody else, right? And could have brought them a lot of joy and fulfillment. Why do you think that that period of your life left you feeling empty of that fulfillment?
There's a lot. When I moved to San Francisco, I was excited because it was a new opportunity. It was a new city. So we moved into a very fancy building. It was the first time I had a bellman, and, you know, I had this card that I had to scan to even get on my elevator, and I was paying $3,500 a month for a 350-square-foot studio. And it was my partner, Chris, and I, and our dog, Elle. And it was cramped. I couldn't really even put my arms out and spread around. I lived across the street from Twitter, where they had 24/7 cafeterias and restaurants to encourage people to really never leave work and just to stay. We'll give you all the delicious food you want, and we'll have a chef giving it to you, but just stay and send another email. We need a little bit more data. And it just didn't feel right. It didn't feel like my compass, I didn't feel fulfilled. I felt there was more to life. There was more opportunities for glee that I didn't have to pay for, that I did carry a briefcase because I love briefcases, but I'm sure this was a little after the time, but I carried my dad's briefcase and it was kind of fun. I didn't like having to wait and cram onto the subways, and everyone was angry and it smelled, and I had to carry a bagged lunch where it wasn't fresh. I made it in the morning and then I'm eating it at lunch, and there was no ritual around nourishing my body. It was all these things that didn't feel natural to me.
So what did you do instead?
I started going to the San Francisco Flower Mart and walking around town and seeing all these microclimates, seeing all the citrus in Berkeley and how you can walk on the streets of Berkeley, California and pick off huge lemons and they fall to the ground and rot because they're over inundated with all these citrus trees. I began to visit scientific centers, and I was able to witness the beauty of life. There's an ocean right there. I saw the whales swimming off the coast. Visiting Napa and Sonoma and seeing these farms where grapes grow, and there's farm to table, which was new to me at the time of, you know, what is that? Isn't everything farm to table? I see lettuce in the grocery stores. That's coming from a farm, right? And so I started to do that, and I felt free. I felt really excited, and more literally, I began to buy flowers from the San Francisco Flower Mart and began to take them home and make arrangements because it felt good. I love the colors. I love thinking about the stories of where they came from and how they grew. And in that fancy building in San Francisco, I would ask our bellmen if I could put them in the entrance tables and stuff like that. And people started to see these designs and they walked by and that's beautiful. Who did those? My first opportunity someone gave me to make some centerpieces for a baby shower. And so I started my career in floral design in San Francisco.
Yeah, were you able to afford your life in San Francisco after you quit that job and you were doing floral arrangements?
Ooh, I'm glad you asked the questions. I think finances should be talked about freely. Mm-hmm. I wasn't, but I had a partner who was able to support me in many different ways. Not that they were covering all of the costs, but I didn't have to worry because I knew there was still income coming. Mm-hmm. And there's been times I have worried about money. I've done a lot of work around finances. And I think sometimes when we worry too much about it, we're actually stifling our ability to have that energetic exchange of money. And we have no power here in the United States of America because we're told what everything costs instead of being able to make a declaration around what we think that exchange should look like. I can tell you more about some of my businesses now where I do let people decide on what they pay for.
Yeah, I'd love to hear
and
that.
And that's powerful because that's a choice. We work hard for our money. So why wouldn't we be able to decide how we spend it?
Yeah, well, let's circle back to that. I want to hear about those businesses and the business practices and the decisions that you've made to run this business or all of these businesses in a way that really feels right to you. But I want to follow this thread in your story. So you started this floral arrangement business in San Francisco.
And then we came back to Denver almost a year to the day. So we left in the very, very early part of the year in 2015, and we were back just in the early year of 2016. And I began Rooney Bloom, which was my floral design business. And I was working with folks getting married and their celebrations of love. And I quickly realized that I wasn't able to create based off of Pinterest. I was the creator. That's what I felt. I was like, okay, I'm a creator. You hire me and then I'd make. But what I found, what it was adhering, similar to being a teacher, it was adhering to somebody else's idea of what their what creativity should be. I need maroons, whites, and greens. I don't want any lime greens or light yellows or oranges. And this is what I want in my boutonnieres and bouquets and corsages. We got the centerpieces and whoa, whoa, whoa. I'm the creator here. I thought this is why I was hired. And I was kind of right back to where I was again. This, I can make money. Markups can be great, but I don't want to do that. I want to create. I want to play. I want to show somebody beauty through my eyes and my creations. And so I started to tend to the yard that we were renting and kind of shimmied my floral design into landscape and interior and exterior, plantscaping, we'll call it. And I opened a plant shop on South Broadway. And it was in collaboration with a yoga studio. And I designed a summer series with a woman by the name of Lynn. And it was yoga and plants. It was an hour of yoga and then an hour of a plant class afterwards. And this is truly when there was maybe one other plant shop in Denver. There's plenty of beautiful ones now. But this is truly, truly before this plant craze kind of picked up. And it was lovely. I was running it out of an old garage, and I thrifted a bunch of pieces and furniture and displayed plant books and articles and magazines about plants and gardening. And I hung plants from the ceilings, and I had all sorts of just really beautiful antique pieces that got people to think. I remember one in particular was at salons. They used to have these big helmets that you put over when women would get their hair done. You kind of sat it on top.
Yeah, I can picture that from movies, not from real life.
Yeah. And it was, I had an old one of those chairs with a big palm next to it. And I created this plant place, and I saw that when people came in, it was like this stillness. It was, you were able to get back to this natural vibration that I think we're born with as babies, of just like coexisting with nature, just being a part of nature. And it was like a big sigh that everyone let out, and it feels so good in here. And I liked that. I liked being able to provide that opportunity for somebody else. I thought I was doing that with floral design. When people are like, oh, this is beautiful, that feels good. But then I saw that through many of my experiences in weddings, that's just another decor piece. It's
just
not
a box to check.
It's a box to check. Mm-hmm. The plant shop was lovely, and the landscaping is lovely. And I still do both today, just in different forms. I don't have a brick and mortar. I provide certain individuals, clients. I'm a referral base only. In fact, I don't know if I've ever marketed anything that I do. I'm all referrals. And that's what I do. I through those spaces, through floral design and then that plant shop and now, which is still plant shopping, but it's, hey, I've got this type of light. This is kind of my situation. And then I provide them with a specific plant. Or this is my landscape. I would love grass. I'm sorry, we're not going to be a good fit. And that's where I slide in with some education about our climate, our arid climate in Colorado. What does native look like? What does an equal reciprocity of working with your exterior space look like? I could put in sod. I could put in an irrigation system. But for me, it wouldn't sit responsibly. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of my landscaping and plantscaping space.
So how did you make the connection then between this part of your life and these businesses and the work that you do in death and dying?
Well, they're all the same. Nature and what is natural dies. Life is not possible without death, and death is not possible without life. If something dies, it was living. And if something is living, it will die. And so working with nature, I saw that. In the fall of 2019, I was approached, probably because of my presence on Instagram, to be a conservation advisor for a new crematory, a greener crematory. And we had a few meetings, and it was wonderful. It is wonderful. And we flew out to Portland, Oregon, to kind of observe an existing water crematory and how they operated. And I was like, this is fascinating. And I knew that this was part of my fabric of who I was and who I am, and that it was something to follow. And we opened in the spring of 2021. And for me, being closest to nature as possible made sense. And as I began to work in this death space, I began to listen to my intuition a bit more and realizing that I actually have parts of me, and we have such a poor English language, so I'll put it in ways that we can. I'm able to care. I'm able to offer spaces of comfort. Parts of me can be kind. Parts of me can be extremely selfless. And for folks who are sick, for folks who may be terminal, for folks who may be alone, for folks who may be scared or uncomfortable, I know I need to act. So I went a little bit further, separate from the physical opportunities, which is water cremation, alkaline hydrolysis. I want to make sure no one dies alone. And I want to make sure that no one dies uncomfortable to the best of my ability. I want to make sure that people die feeling safe. And I also want to make sure that families and friends of people who have lost someone that they care about can understand and navigate grief with tools that I can provide them. So I took some courses, and I really began to spend time thinking and reflecting upon how can I wake up and be better at loving my community, at caring about the elderly folks in our communities who have legacies. We all love storytelling, I think. And I think the only way we can listen truly to stories is to make time and space for those things to happen. And many times that's an end-of-life care, because before that, we're busy.
Mm, yeah. I'm always really intrigued by the idea of learning something that is on one side innate or very human, and in learning how to quote unquote be a better person or to take care of each other in a better way. But I actually think that we really can, right? That time that you invested in learning how to be there with people who are dying or with loved ones who have lost somebody, I'm sure that you gained a lot of wisdom from that. Is there anything that you can share you think that you've picked up over the years that has been really helpful?
Listening. We are quick to respond. And working with folks who are dying, but it's important to listen. Not listening to respond, but listening to understand where someone else may be and why they're thinking the way that they are, so that you maybe can respond in a way that they'll able to then receive and understand your perspective. I would say listening is most important.
Hmm. The way you're talking about it too reminds me of one of my favorite quotes by Ram Dass. The idea that we're all just walking each other home.
Truly.
Yeah. So what is water cremation or green cremation?
Greener cremation, we'll say. Using the word green in many spaces is diluted and confusing, I think, to the public. And I think it's important that when someone says that they're green, you ask why. We are a greener option of honoring your body after you pass. And so when we talk about options, which many of you may be hearing for the first time, we talk about casket burials, we talk about flame cremations, we talk about water cremations, or natural burial and human composting. Colorado has all available to us, which is beautiful. We're one of 2 states and 10 counties that has all 4 options available, wow, which means we have a lot of work to do. Alkaline hydrolysis is a way to reduce bodies down to a liquid and a skeleton. And so many spaces use potassium hydroxide to reduce bodies down to a liquid in about 18 hours. And so I'll use the example of me. I am 125 pounds. And if I died and I chose water cremation to honor my body, they would put me in a tank, a large stainless steel tank with potassium hydroxide and about 145, 150 gallons of water, maybe about 140 gallons of water. And this water is warm. This water is warm, never boiling. And in 18 hours, you're left with a liquid and a skeleton.
Wait, let's pause. What are we hearing right now?
We're hearing coyotes.
Oh.
They are speaking to the sirens.
So we heard a sirens going by, an ambulance or something like that. And now we're hearing the coyotes respond.
Yes, there's probably quite a few by the noise of it. So when we say greener and that this is a greener way, it's greener because in flame cremation, there's about 25 to 28 gallons of fuel used to work the incinerator. And we can talk in other spaces about the ethics of flame cremation. But for these purposes of this conversation, water cremation is greener because you're not being buried in a metal and shellacked casket. You're not being buried with embalming fluids that are very dangerous and toxic to the earth. You're not releasing CO2. And so it's greener. This is a sterile solution that is made up of most of what's in commercially produced fertilizers. And people say, wow, that's fascinating. And I say, is it? Is it fascinating to think of yourself as an organic being separate from your spirit? And then people look at me and they're like, well, I guess not. If you are what you eat, you're just made up of everything that's in nature. If energy is neither created nor destroyed and you're eating food, good food, and putting it into your body, you're made up of all these components. And so here at the farm, we are able to return that liquid to the ground here. And we nourish the plants here with what we call tree tea. And it's a sterile solution, as I mentioned, so there is no DNA in it. There is no way you could trace back a certain liquid to a certain person. And when we talk about greener options in burial, natural burial and composting, human composting, which is new, California just passed it, which is wonderful, but that is being able to put a body in a container with enzymes and soil. And after about 4 months, you have bones in nutrient-rich soil that can be returned back to the lands. natural burial would be wrapping a decedent or a dead person in a shroud and placing them directly into the ground with nothing. Just as they came into this world, they're going out in this world. And people say, wow, I didn't know these options were available and or not available to me. And that's where sovereignty comes in, because I want to choose what happens to my body when I die. If I die tragically, it's important for me to make sure that my loved ones and friends know my decision now. I'm working on platforms to be able to provide the community so they can make their declarations around how they want to be honored. Because as teenagers, we don't talk about it. In Western culture, we don't talk about it. I would say the majority of adults and their loved ones do not know how each other wants to be honored after they pass. And in many times, it compounds grief because their families are left with those decisions. And we can think about those spaces much easier when we're not working through grief.
So when you talk about this greener option and the liquid cremains being returned to the farm, I can imagine that that makes some people squeamish. You know, that we, as you said, have discomfort with death. And I think that particular area, the decomposition of our bodies and the idea of human remains, is tied in a lot of our minds to horror movies or to something that would be smelly or something that would be gross or just something that feels really uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. How do people usually respond to that when you describe it for the first time or when they're looking into that option for a loved one?
The description is hard because myself as a visual learner, I don't know what that means. And so I show people my farm and I show people life. And many times it's a self-discovery, feeling out through that. I can tell you how I felt the first few times I returned tree tea here at the farm, and I maybe got a splash on me, on my face, on my feet. I wear sandals a lot, and I'm barefoot a lot. And I can tell you now that goo from flowers that have sat in water kind of grosses me out more than working with tree tea.
It does get a little smelly, that's true.
Or taking out like stinky trash is something that maybe I would say is like, oh, gross, or ew, what's that smell? Or maybe a fart. But I think we need to look at everything in our life. Death is all around us. Mm-hmm. And sometimes religion or religious views prevent us from being able to see us as equal to nature instead of greater than. I was raised Roman Catholic. I was raised thinking I was smarter and more intelligent than nature, and the species that live outside all winter long. I was raised to think I was smarter than the monarch butterfly. The monarch butterfly, which gets carried away from a little poof of wind, yet travels to Central America during the winter and then flies back up to follow the milkweed. I was raised to think I was smarter than the sea turtles who return to the beach to lay their eggs in the same space they were born, or the whales that travel thousands and thousands of miles to feed for the summer or feed for their winter or whatever it may be. But what I know is I'm equal to nature. And so I don't think it's gross. I think visibility is important for understanding. And when we don't make death visible, it becomes something we can only make up in our heads.
Yeah. In the past few years, I think since really dealing with death and grief myself for the first time, or I should say the first time in a really visceral, personal way, I found it really comforting. I think when I'm making a decision and the thoughts pop up in my mind about, you know, how will this look or what will people think or what about the financial side? All questions that maybe have important pieces to them. But that thought of like, we're all going to die, you know, like what do I actually need as a natural being and what is actually going to matter when I get to the end of my life? And so I guess what you're talking about of that being more comfortable with death, being able to think about the fact that we all die, that we are all part of nature and, you know, we're not invincible. I think there is real value to that in terms of our lived experience now.
Because fear creeps in. When we think about ourselves dying, we're going to have to make some changes in how we live today. And we're afraid to do that. Sometimes I'm afraid to do that. If I'm going to die tomorrow, the people that I love, what do I want them to feel like today? And I thought about that this morning as I texted my sister and I said, when my nephews wake up, will you call me? Because I just want to say, hey, I love you. And I don't feel sad, but I'm feeling as a human that we need to do that more. Why would be going to work and sending an email more important than seeing your loved one? It's going to require you to make some changes if you are going to acknowledge that your life is finite and that you may die today.
I think one of the huge challenges with that is that the messaging a lot of the times is going to work and sending that email is the absolute most urgent, most important thing, you know, and not just in a you better do it so your boss isn't mad at you kind of way, but you better do that so that you can provide for your family, so that you can earn the money that you need. So I think there is sort of this tension and this balance that a lot of us find of living in a world where we do have to keep up in a certain way with what society tells us is important. And when we start to wake up to the reality that it is so much more important to talk to my nephews this morning, it's so much more important to take my shoes off and feel the dirt under my toes, that we still have to live in reality too. You know,
yeah.
We don't get to just sit in a circle with our loved ones and laugh until until we die.
And I think you can, because it's all these silly things we say but have been clouded with things that really don't mean much. But count your blessings. You have everything you need. Everything you need, I promise. If we all realize together that we had what we needed, maybe we'd have a one-day work week. I'm still navigating this space verbally because I think I'm getting a lot of parts of it mentally, but it's hard for me to put into this language we've made. Try it out. I'm trying it out. I'm trying out setting boundaries and canceling things when I know I need to nourish my mind and my body. I'm trying it out.
Mm-hmm.
I'm advocating for what I need with my partner and my family. I need this. That can be a very heavy line because selfishness can sneak in. I need honeycomb ice cream.
Well, I need that right now.
I need it. And I need my mom's zucchini blueberry bread. It's fantastic.
I need that right now, too.
I need it right now. I don't. What I need right now is unconditional love.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, I got it. So guess what? I got everything I need.
I got everything I need. I sense from you, though, too, a need to use your energy and your time in a way that is meaningful. You know, when I talked to you a couple weeks ago, you'd spent your morning dropping flowers off at hospice and dealing with a lot of moving parts of all of your businesses. And, you know, there is this sort of like active, energized offering component too, that your energy is going to creating a space and creating opportunities and giving yourself in a way that other people can understand death or to feel more comfortable with it or to feel comforted in those times.
I feel that's my purpose, and if I don't feel that I'm living out my purpose, then I start to deal with other emotions I can't control. then I maybe actually start to witness a chemical space in my body that doesn't feel good. And so I take control of what my purpose is, or what I feel that my purpose is. And I feel that if I'm not giving this energy or what I can, and then why am I here? What am I doing? And those other spaces don't feel good to me. But offering up what I can as the most natural exchange, I get something back from visiting folks on hospice. I don't know if I can really define what that is. A lot of people say, I don't have the time. And that's sad to me that you don't have time to spend time with folks who are dying or alone. That makes me sad, because I think about how restrictive everything else in your life must be. The days don't get longer. The days don't get shorter. Time is what you do with it. I want other people to feel good. I want that glee. I want joy. I want happiness. And I think part of the reason of why I want that is because I don't see it more often than the contrary.
Mm-hmm.
I see more sadness and confusion. I see that more often. I see more anxiety and depression than I do see authentic joy.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about how you've built up this life for yourself that has so much of that glee, so much of that joy, and so much
of that. I do experience sadness too.
Of course.
But a lot of it is glee.
I think that's part of it.
Definitely.
I think that's part of it.
I'm ebbing and flowing with all the feelings.
<That's good>. So how did you come to buy Half Moon Farm, where we're sitting now?
Half Moon Farm, it was a gift of the cosmos. Now, I did drain my bank account for it. So when we talk about it in the literal sense of here we are and what we're doing, I did have to pay for it. It was August of 2020, and my partner and I were renting on the south side of Denver, and we were looking for a home. And I was hoping for 4 raised beds, somewhere where I could just grow a little bit more. And a person from the community had texted me and said, your dream home went on the market. And they sent me the link for this property I own. And I saw the price and I was like, no way. No way. I can't afford this, which was interesting. And I sent the listing to my agent and I said, I know this is not on the properties that we've been pre-approved for. However, is there any way I can get a tour? And he said, yes, we can take a tour tomorrow morning. And so I came here and I wept. I didn't care about the home, which is beautiful. I came straight to the backyard. Mm-hmm. And I knew this was it. And I called our lender and I made an ask. How can I wake up here every day? I know I've been pre-approved for half of this amount. How can I wake up here every day? And he said, well, COVID and money and the government, there's things right now called jumbo loans, and we can double what you've been pre-approved for. And I said, great, I need that letter. I'm writing an offer. And so we put in an offer, and we lost to an offer that was almost $100,000 over asking. And then I kind of was like, okay, I get it. Like, this is a weird space. We got to play with money. And a week later, we got a call from the listing agent, and they said something along the lines of, they weren't comfortable with moving forward with the process of the other folks, and they want to know if you can come in at this offer and we'll go under contract immediately. Now, I was doing all this work on Instagram, which I've since really moved away from, but I was allowed. I was loud in the community. And so the previous owners knew me from Instagram, and we came in at that offer, and I wake up here every day. And I also want to recognize that they were selling because they were the husband was ill, and he has since left this earth. And so I actually came into the space through death. I came into being a steward of this land through somebody else not being able to take care of it and wanting to be closer to their family and the days they had left on this earth. And so it's all part of that, right? It's all part of this space I'm in now. It's operating as a flower farm, and we have lots of food and medicinals here, which right now we don't use our tree tea on, except for what I consume and my partner consumes. It is safe, but we have work to do breaking through some taboos in order for the community to feel safe in consuming foods that have been nourished with people like us. And so that's how I came into the space. And we're slowly working towards a more permaculture style model. We have water rights here, so I'm thankful that I don't use too much city water to nourish this land. I use everything from Clear Creek in Colorado, which runs through Golden, Colorado, which is the same creek that brews all the beer if you drink Coors and anything that comes from Coors. And so it's wow. Everyone's like, wow. And I say, wow, too. I say, wow, when I'm taking a bath in my clawfoot tubs or walking on the floors that are reclaimed from barns that are hundreds of years old. This home was built in 1928. And on the south side, we allow people to stay. We have a 700-square-foot, one-bedroom, kitchen included, everything, space for folks who are terminally ill and taking advantage of medical aid in dying to pass here, to die here with comfort, with their families around them, in assisted living facilities that receive federal funds. It is not legal to end your life with your doctor's care. And I have the power to provide a space for people to not die alone and for people to die comfortably. And so I'm doing that. Mm-hmm. And so we are working on all sorts of things to open up this space. Do I own it and pay the mortgage? You're darn right I do. And also, this is a public space. I was recently approved for my nonprofit. You know, you have to ask for permission so you don't have to pay taxes. And I was approved, and so I have a nonprofit called Regeneration Earth, which I'll be launching in January of 2023, so that I can open the floodgates to all of this corporate money, and so they can get their tax write-offs, and I can provide people spaces and education. And families, education, and children, education, and liberty, religious celebrations, whatever it may be around death and around end-of-life care and around programming and public implementation of these things and making it a little less scary. Parts of death are scary because it's something we can't experience until we're dead. And we want to maybe in this time and space to be able to talk about death. Oh yeah, I experienced this and this is how it was. And we can't unless we've had a near-death experience, which is interesting and intriguing to me. I have not had one. So that's how I really got here, and that's how this space operates here at Half Moon Farm, which comes from the south side of San Francisco and Half Moon Bay.
Half Moon Bay, beautiful.
Yeah, in 2015 when I was there, and really, which was a space that I explored with my partner and saw the beautiful farmlands of flowers, floriculture, and food.
So on any given day here, you may have someone staying in the Sage House. You may have somebody choosing to end their life in your home and living out their last moments in your home. You might have somebody coming here for education. You might have somebody coming here to pick flowers or to pick food. Is that right?
All of it.
Yeah.
All of it. I may have a person navigating grief coming to sit and feel the wind. I may have a family whose loved one has been returned here coming to think about their loved one in this space. This serves as everything natural. And if you deem visiting here natural in whatever sense it may be, I'll accept that. You can come clip flowers. You can come learn how to grow a seed. You can come seed harvest.
Well, we've come full circle. I'd love to hear about kind of your decisions in business. You are running businesses and you're running a nonprofit, or you're about to be.
And you're also doing it in this way that's mindful of what really matters and what's really important. So how have you chosen to navigate prices and exchange of money?
Ooh, interesting. It's different for every person. A lot of intuition. A lot of listening. Where are people at and maybe their financial state now? What are the gifts somebody else could offer me? And many times I can give and give and give, but I do need to have my battery filled. And so it's a case-by-case basis, truly, in many different ways. Now, I manage some estates, and I manage some large institutions which I know have money, and therefore I have set prices. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to grief, I believe sometimes it can be compounded when having to talk about financial abilities or inabilities. And so, with this nonprofit, I don't want to talk about sliding scales, but I guess I'll say it, but it will be similar to like a sliding scale. I don't have expectations necessarily of what it's going to take in order to do what I need to do, because I'm going to do what I need to do regardless. Mm-hmm. I don't care if I have $10 million in my account. I am opening up an assisted living facility. It's going to happen. It is happening now. So it's just different. And I can maybe show people, but it's hard for me to kind of speak about sometimes. I can mow a lawn and charge somebody $35 for, you know, so many square feet. That can be my literal space. But I also tend to many geriatrics and their yards and where they live. Mm-hmm. And I never invoice them. And they get very mad at me. I would much rather my 90-year-old client to be able to go out into her garden and read a book than for her to have to worry about how she's going to pay me on a fixed income. Mm-hmm. So it's listening sometimes.
Have you ever had moments where you were worried about paying your mortgage or covering the expenses for this farm?
Never. I've started to get a little anxious. In the winter, I rest a lot. And, you know, as we're told from when we're born, if you're not getting this paycheck all the time, then something's going to go awry. So I have navigated that space, but...
That's a theme that I've really been exploring. And I think trying for a while to think of how to ask people about this, but that idea that we can have periods of rest, we don't have to always be productive, and we get to make a meaningful contribution. And so I think that's a beautiful element of this, that you sort of have that built in, that spring, summer, and fall are going to be these really active, sort of busier times, and that you have that rest built in the wintertime.
We need that. We're a part of nature. Nature rests. Let's emulate nature. Let's mimic that, because we are a part of nature. And I think any medical professional, and really any professional who wants someone to be healthy, is going to probably tell you rest.
And get some sunshine. And
yeah. Definitely. Rest is key. It's where we can learn and think and do and collect the energy in order to continue on. It's rest. And look at the seasons, you know. And part of what I've learned is being able to embrace that. I don't necessarily want to be a slow in winter. I don't. So maybe I'll travel and go somewhere I can get a little bit more sun. And then I come back to the shorter days here in Colorado. So I certainly count the opportunities that I have and the life that I've created, because it gives me the energy and the tools to be able to support people where they need support.
Yeah. Well, I'm feeling so refreshed and nourished by spending a morning in this farm. And, you know, kind of as we've been talking, the sun is sort of coming up and peeking through this tree above us. And you can hear birds this whole time. A bee just buzzed by my ear. And it's beautiful. I think I can definitely see what you mean by the glee and sort of the freedom of getting to spend your days here. And I would like to let you get on with your day and know that there's some important things happening today. And maybe before we say goodbye, before we end our conversation, I'd love to hear kind of about your thoughts. What are you hoping to make happen in the future? What are you really looking forward to right now?
What I will make happen in the future is giving people an opportunity to learn about us and the cycle of life. And what I know is that I depend on you and everyone listening and nature in order to do what I do. We rely on one another, and the love that I show you is the love that I need back too. Maybe that's a hope. Mm-hmm. I hope we all can show each other that love, and I hope we all can be a good mirror for one another, admit faults, asking for help, because we cannot do life alone. Maybe that's one of my hopes. Mm. I do know that in order to do this, platforms like this and spaces like this are necessary so that people can just begin to think. And I need to listen to other stories so that I know how and where I'm at in my learning process and what things need to change about me so I can make maybe what I have to share a little bit more digestible. Hmm. So I'll listen.
Thank you so much, Eric.
Thank you.
It's been a beautiful morning, and I really appreciate you giving me this time and inviting me into this space.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Open Exploration Podcast. To find out more about Eric's work, visit halfmoonfarm.co or, after its launch at the end of February 2023, at regenerationearth.org. This podcast is produced by me, Lily Worthen. Thank you to Poddington Bear, John Sib, and the other unlisted artists for sharing your music that brings this podcast to life. And to all of you listening, thank you. Love to you all. And until next time, happy exploring.